Part 1.
You will hear part of a telephone conversation between a job seeker and a recruitment agent. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. You should answer the questions as you listen because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Yes, so that's Janet Thompson. Would you like me to spell it?
If you wouldn't mind, thank you. Just the surname, please.
No problem. It's Thompson.
Great. Now, Janet, before we go through the openings I have here in front of me, might I just take a few more details to complete your profile on my system?
Of course. What would you like to know?
Well, let's start with your email address, please.
OK, janthompson@hort.net.
I see. Is that Jan as in J-A-N?
No, that wasn't available. I had to make do with J-A-N-N. Here, let me spell it for you again, just to be sure. janthompson@hort.net.
Much obliged. And could I ask, do you have your referee details to hand?
Yes, what do you need?
I need one work reference and one character reference from a friend or colleague.
OK, for a work reference, there's Jane Foote. She's my former boss at Bermuda Girls' School, head of English.
OK.
My personal referee is Monica Carbody. Mon and I have been best friends since we met in Bermuda in 1991, when she was deputy head of English under Mrs. Foote.
Perfect. And you mentioned, of course, that you're an English teacher, but are there any additional subjects you're qualified to teach?
Yes, I have a diploma in special needs, and I can also do history to GCSE level.
Very good.
Before listening to the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Do you think I stand a good chance of finding something?
Oh, better than good. In fact, we have some positions we can offer you today. You see, it's not so difficult to find a temporary role. Tell you the truth, there are plenty of them around, but getting a permanent position will prove a little more trying, though. Would you be prepared to take up a position short term?
Of course, anything that pays.
Excellent. Well, there are 3 positions that I can offer you right now. The first is a teacher of English in LaSalle School. I'm sure you know it, right in the city centre.
Yes, near where I live, actually.
Even better. Well, it's a 6-month contract, and the very attractive thing about this role is that the head of English at LaSalle will, if she's satisfied with your performance after 6 months, offer to make you a permanent member of staff.
Wow, that's food for thought.
It certainly is, bearing in mind what I said before about how hard it is to find a permanent role. The second position I have to offer you is in a school near Chelsea. It's called the Chelsea Free School. Are you familiar?
I can't say that I've heard of it.
Well, this contract is for 1 year, which is a lot better, looking at it from a short-term job security perspective, than the first role I mentioned. But you also have to realise that you are a temporary replacement for a female teacher who has taken maternity leave. There is no prospect of the position being made permanent.
I see.
I have one other vacancy at the minute, though I doubt you'll find it quite so appealing. It's situated in rural Cambridgeshire. I'll spell that just in case you want to take it down. Cambridgeshire. And the school simply goes by the name Cambridge, though it's not in any way related to the other more well-known establishment of the same name.
I was just going to ask that. What a lovely location, though, eh?
Yes, but there's a catch. It's only a 6-week contract to cover for someone on extended sick leave.
I see. Well, I guess that's ruled out then. What sort of salary can I...
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Starting at the beginning, you can see the on-off switch just beneath the two lights. Having turned the machine on, these lights now become very important. When the light on the left has gone out, you can begin making coffee, as it means the water is now hot enough. Next to that is the water level light. If this is illuminated, it means the machine does not have enough water. It is essential that you turn the machine off and add more water the moment this light comes on, otherwise you could damage the heating element. Once you have checked that both the heater light and the water level light are off, make sure the filter holder, that's the part with the handle just under the control panel, is in place. Once you have your cups ready, it is time to press the coffee delivery switch. That's the button just above the filter holder beside the boiler meter. Remember to take a quick look at the meter as it tells you the exact temperature of the water. On both the left and right-hand side of the machine, on the same level as the filter holder, you can see the steam pipes used for heating milk. These steam taps need to be cleaned regularly to avoid blocking. And finally, if you do spill any coffee, don't worry. Just make sure that the drainage pipe at the bottom of the machine is leading into a sink or a suitable waste container. As with the steam taps, the drainage pipe needs regular cleaning.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
First and most importantly, I'll tell you where you should go from tomorrow for your lectures and classes. The Health Sciences building is on the west side of the campus, opposite the library, beside the History Department. As you are probably aware, there are 6 modules to the course, which will take a year to complete. That's 2 modules each term. In the first module of this term, you will be looking at current laws with regard to health and safety in the workplace. Don't forget that as you progress through the course, you should be building your thesis. This will need to be completed by the end of the year. Coursework will also be credited to your final grade, but the most important part of the course is the thesis. Now, the final thing I want to tell you, and again you should know this, is that there will be a number of guest speakers throughout your course. They will come from a number of different medical backgrounds, but they will all be giving you their views on the relevance of health sciences in their occupations.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear two business studies students, Evelyn and Mark, preparing for a seminar presentation. Before you hear the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25.
Well, I think the marketing of food would be a good topic. I read a very interesting article the other day about the Canadian food market.
Hmm. I suppose everybody's interested in food, even if it's trying not to eat. Why Canada? I know that's where you come from, but isn't it just all North America, really?
No. That's why I thought this article was interesting. Although lots of U.S. companies are well established in Canada, and vice versa, there are still subtle differences between the two markets. It says here, the Canadian market is definitely not a northern clone of the U.S. I like that. And it says that if you understand these differences, it can have a big impact on successful food marketing.
So I know that Canada has a big French-speaking population in Quebec. Is this what they're referring to?
Not only French and English speakers, there are many different ethnic groups in Canada. It's really quite multicultural. For example, Toronto has large Asian and Italian populations, and Vancouver's got a large Asian population too. And because Canada's population is small, these groups make quite an impact, introducing new styles of cooking. So, you can see lots of unfamiliar vegetables and things in the markets, and new restaurants are opening every day. It's great if you love trying out new foods, as many people do.
Which kinds of food are becoming popular?
Well, some Asian food, I'd say, has been popular for quite a while, like Chinese. But now, Southeast Asian restaurants are becoming very fashionable. Then, there's Mediterranean, of course, such as Greek, Italian, and so on. But Caribbean and Mexican food is really taking off among young people these days.
So are the supermarkets starting to stock the ingredients that are needed to prepare these foods at home? You know, all those unusual condiments and sauces.
Yes, that's right. It's quite interesting going to the supermarket, isn't it? And noticing how they're introducing sections for foods of different nationalities. You can buy quite exotic products locally these days. The article mentioned that 80% of the Canadian retail market is controlled by 8 major national supermarket chains, so that when they introduce changes, they can happen quite rapidly.
Okay. Well, how are we going to organize this seminar then?
I made some notes on the trends in the Canadian market, about changing tastes, and also patterns for where food is consumed. I thought maybe we could summarize it into a chart or table and maybe use the overhead projector to present it.
Good idea. Maybe I could have a look for similar trends and tastes in Australia and the UK for comparison. Let's have a look at what you found.
Before the conversation continues, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now, as the conversation continues, answer questions 26 to 30.
The most significant trend, it seemed to me, was that Canadians are definitely interested in healthy food. For example, did you know that salads are the third most commonly eaten food in Canadian restaurants?
Really? What about organic food then? Is that becoming more popular?
Yes, it's definitely moving into the mainstream compared to a few years ago. And a recent survey showed that 4 out of 5 shoppers said that they check the fat and nutritional information on the packet when they're deciding what to buy.
What other trends did you find out?
There's one change I noticed straight away when I was home last year, in the meat department. You know, here the meat packaging says rump steak or four-quarter chops and so on. Well, they discovered that most consumers these days didn't know what to do with these roasts and rounds and ribs. So the government approved a new naming system for cuts of meat, which is related to the required cooking technique.
What a good idea. I've never really understood the difference between sirloin, rump, round, and all those names. So how many new categories are there?
8. There are 3 kinds of steak, for grilling, for marinating, and for simmering. And then there's what they call quick-serve beef, for stir-fries, I suppose. And premium oven roast, pot roast, and stewing beef. It's a great idea, isn't it? I hope it catches on here.
I agree. Any other trends that you thought were significant?
Well, what's really interesting is what the article called mobile meals. In other words, more and more Canadians are eating meals away from home, but not just eating more junk food. They're projecting a 40% increase in snack food sales over the next 3 years, and the growth is coming from healthy snacks. You know, the ones that have less cholesterol and fat, such as muesli bars, health food bars, and those types of products. Apparently, in the food marketing jargon, they're called nutritious portable foods, which means healthy snacks. The other major trend is that young people are doing more of the food shopping these days, so marketing has to be aimed more at them, as well as more conventionally at the mother.
Thanks, Evelyn. I think we'll have an interesting discussion about these trends and the comparisons with other English-speaking countries. I'll see if I can get some information about them to compare with yours, and meet you on Friday to put it together.
See you then. Bye.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You will hear a talk on seasonal affective disorder. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
In the past few years, a new condition has been identified and given a name, SAD, short for Seasonal Affective Disorder. This is now recognised as a distinct kind of clinical depression, where people become depressed at the onset of winter, accompanied by a craving for sweet things, causing weight gain. Each spring and summer would then bring on almost maniacal highs and feelings of boundless energy and happiness. Experiments to combat this depression showed that increased exposure to bright light in humans could suppress their production of a darkness-related hormone called melatonin. The light needed to induce this change was about 2,000 lux, or about 4 times brighter than ordinary household lighting. It was then calculated that if bright light could suppress melatonin secretion, then it might have other effects on the brain, including the reversal of symptoms of depression. While melatonin's precise role in SAD has not been pinned down, the theory led to effective treatment. Not surprisingly, SAD affects more people where winter nights are longer and days shorter. In the UK, an estimated 500,000 adults develop full-blown SAD in winter, and twice this number suffer the milder condition called subsyndromal SAD. About 80% of sufferers improve when given light therapy, and improvement usually comes within 2 to 4 days. Scientists are still unsure why winter depression happens, but more than a decade of research has turned up some surprising findings. Nearly 80% of SAD victims are women. Researchers are uncertain why this is so. SAD can affect people at any age, but typically it begins around the age of 20 and becomes less common between 40 and 50. SAD is comparatively rare in children and adolescents, but so far researchers have been unable to come up with a logical reason for this. As many as half of SAD sufferers have at least one family member with depressive illness, suggesting that the depression has a genetic component. Some patients experience shifts in their body clocks when they're depressed in winter. They are morning people at one time of the year and become evening people at another. What is the underlying difference between SAD sufferers and others? A clue can be found in carbohydrate craving, a common symptom. People often become obsessed with chocolate, for example. Carbohydrates alter brain chemistry by increasing the level of a soothing chemical called serotonin, a neurotransmitter that carries signals between brain cells. SAD sufferers crave carbohydrates because they may need serotonin to lift their mood. This craving can be intense, in fact, an addiction. It may be that the serotonin system of the brain has problems regulating itself during the winter. Some SAD sufferers respond well to the drug Prozac, thought to influence the brain's serotonin-using system. Other brain chemicals and hormones probably play a role in winter depression. Another neurotransmitter, dopamine, for example, may be inadequate in certain cases. Researchers hope to uncover clues to SAD's secret by probing similarities between SAD and hibernation. Though no valid link between the two has been established, some SAD patients say they feel like hibernating animals. SAD sufferers tend to put on fat in autumn and early winter, roughly the time when such hibernators as bears and squirrels do.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.